Okay.
Welcome to the Permaculture Pimp Cast with your host, the Permaculture Pimp Daddy and the Pasture Raised Pimp. Get your recommended daily allowance of permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. Tip a pimp. Stay alert, stay alive. Permaculture is my passion. Oh yeah, welcome to episode 119 of the Permaculture Pimp Cast, the only pimp cast on planet Earth, where we discuss permaculture preparedness and practical living. How you doing, son?
Pretty good. We got all the electronic bugs worked out, so I'm doing a lot better now.
Well, we'll cover some of that here in a minute. All right, y'all, this episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Heaven's Harvest, y'all, 10% off with promo code PERMA. And honestly, I can't think of a better time to think about getting prepared than right now, whether it's their seeds or their food stocks or some of the things that you can't procure at home. I mean, it's absolutely jaw-dropping when I hear people, mainstream people like Dan Bongino, pleading with his audience to go out there and get prepared. So we've done numerous videos on how you ought to go about doing that. And maybe consider Heaven's Harvest for all the things you can't do yourself or some of the freeze-dried items that you think you might need for a period of time, who even knows how long, or for your seeds, because the ones we got from them, they say 85% germination. Ours, we haven't had any failures with anything we've gotten from them. No. So it's really good. All right, y'all. So if you want to tip a pimp, go check us out on the Fountain app. You can listen to all your podcasts over there. Right at the top of the list needs to be the Permaculture Pimp Cast. You can also tip us with some sats, some satoshis.
Fractions of a Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's what we'll go by. So anyway, you can do all that over there. You can double up the speed. You can even leave messages over there. So starting right off, we got some farm news, as always. So right now, it's, you know, the peak of the harvest season. We've been on this property just over 4 years. And right now, those trees, man.
I think it's almost 4 years.
Almost 4 years.
Almost 4 years, yeah.
Yeah.
This fall will be 4 years, November, I think.
Yep. And all those trees we put in, good night, man. I mean, some of the peaches, we're getting pears, raspberries, blueberries. I mean, you name it,
yeah,
man.
That's what we're getting right now. Those elderberries are going to be ready before too long. I don't know if you saw those.
Yep, those are kicking. I mean, all of this stuff, raspberries, blueberries, and I mean, it's happening in record time. So for a lot of you folks out there that are thinking, oh my goodness, man, I'm so far. I just woke up. I'm getting out of the matrix. I need to go out there and get myself squared away. Look, it doesn't take long if you start with the soil. Use good technique. Don't worry about trying to be, coming up with a latest, greatest, whatever. There's a lot of people out there that have already done a lot of the heavy lifting for you. And I like to think that maybe we're part of that group. So just follow the recipe until you find a method that works for you. In fact, regarding those trees, I'm actually at that time of year where I basically mulch all year long. I really do. I mean, I mulch whenever I get a spare amount of time, and I mulch and I mulch and I mulch, especially when it's around trees. And as always, as I've talked about before, I use the cardboard as something of a barometer to determine how much life you have in that soil. So if you go back after a specified period of time and there's no cardboard, well, that tells you your soil life is kicking. Well, ours is kicking all the way up and down there because there's not an ounce of that cardboard left. In fact, I've been pulling away what's left of some of the wood chips that are there. And I'm basically going through the whole process again. And folks, if you haven't seen the videos, let me just go ahead and cover that. If you got a tree, one of the easiest ways to just look after it, thing that's been working forever and a day, is I chop down all the comfrey that's near that tree. And regardless of what tree it is, there's a ton of comfrey around it. And I pile that stuff up as thick as I can get it, cover that up with cardboard, and then cover all of it up. I've even used raw manure. Now, it's generally advised that you don't exactly do that. Now, I'm not going to dig it into the soil, but it's a method I got from Jeff Lawton as far as the manure. And it works. Just don't try to stick it down in there. To a certain extent, it might be anaerobic. Either way, you can even surface mount it. But my method is, this time of year, is if you have some compost, that's fine too. If you have extra compost extract, be really careful where you get it. If you're buying it, it's always best to make it yourself. But right now is a really good time. I'm putting down this stuff all year long. So basically, it's I pull back the wood chips, put down the comfrey, and I might even peek down in there in a small spot and make absolutely sure my soil's looking good, and right now it's bomb.
Well, yeah, digging up that comfrey, I've noticed a huge change in the soil down at the bottom of the food forest by the hugel mound. It's changed quite a bit because it used to be real thick clay over there, and now it's starting to break up into like that crumb structure deeper down. So before, maybe it was like a couple of inches. Well, it's progressing. It's getting deeper.
Well, and that's it, folks. I mean, you just keep adding life and life and life to your soil, and your microbes, your allies, they're going to do the work for you. But when it comes to these trees, it's really simple this time of year. This is why we champion comfrey as much as we do. And don't forget, right now we're throwing in a crown for everybody that orders any. And I'm not saying this to sell comfrey. A lot of you have already got it. You have it. And the idea is for us to ultimately put ourselves out of the comfrey business because it's so ubiquitous. So anyway, I lay that comfrey down, put my cardboard on top, throw wood chips on top of that. And then within no time at all, every bit of it's gone. In fact, that comfrey, when it breaks down, it creates this really slimy layer that seems to be cracked for worms.
Yeah, it is. And especially if you have so harvesting comfrey, if some of you guys may have noticed, those really old comfrey plants, the ones that you may have forgotten about in the corner, if you dig those up and bust those open, in the center of that crown, it's kind of broken down, and you usually see a ton of roly-polies and a ton of worms right in the center of that comfrey. And I wonder if that is one of the facilitators in the changing of the soil down in that area of the food forest. Because it kind of got messed up whenever we added that hugel mound there. Because there was like right at that connection where the food forest meets the hugel mound is where I'm talking about. Some of that clay kind of spilled over into on top of those wood chips right there. And the comfrey has completely fixed it. But it also gives the worms, especially the composting worms, a place to live.
Yeah, it's definitely, as that comfrey pushes down, it's definitely going to open up avenues. And of course, the worms are going to make some themselves. But I'm telling you, underneath these trees, man, that is my go-to big, big time. And if you also have a tree that needs, now one of my methods that I use, and I got this one from Toby Hemingway, was actually planting your nitrogen fixer in the same hole as your productive tree. Now I have a number of trees out there where that's happening. If not in the same hole, in very close proximity, for all the reasons we cited before. Now, those trees need constant coppicing, especially if it's going to be something like a mimosa, something you're worried about getting away from you. Guess what? You can stick that in your mulch ring as well. That's the whole, and even if you don't want to bring in wood mulch, if you were to do nothing but take your nitrogen fixers, chop them up, throw them around the tree along with the comfrey and just kind of layer it, you're good to go. But I take all that and I throw wood chips on top of it. So that's one of the things, as far as farm news, that's one of the many things I got going right now. And what were you going
to
say?
Hey, just to go over the comfrey thing, because we didn't announce it really on the podcast, and I don't think we went over it well enough. So if you buy an order of comfrey on the website, like if you get a 10 or a 20 pack, you get a free comfrey crown along with it. So some people may not have seen the video that are listening. So
yeah, I mentioned all that.
Well, just briefly. I'm just making it clear because you just kind of skipped over it a little bit.
Okay. Well, as far as other farm news, it's been a nonstop extract making with some of this bomb compost we got down there. We've done videos on it, but I also want to make sure I put an exclamation point on it. Look, I know there's not a whole lot of people that farm full-time the way we do. So you're going to have, you know, other obligations, whether it's children, whether it's your job, whether it's another. This is my job, and that's what I do. So I make a lot of compost. And it's not, as soon as one pile comes out of the cage, I'm throwing another one right back in. Because I know this is the key to so much in terms of improving everything. So one way to take that compost, because I only have really one pile that's really bioactive, biocomplete. The rest of it's catching up. But let me talk about one of those tricks I'm doing. I'm making compost extract to put all over the field. But I'm making sure I keep back a little bit of it to inoculate the piles I got coming after the one I know that's perfect. So I got a really, really awesome comfrey pile or a compost pile not only do I take a little bit of that compost and stick it into the other piles as they're curing, let's call it, because the compost technically isn't done until it comes to ambient temperature. Well, as they're getting there, you got to make sure your moisture is somewhere around 50%, depending on where you live. And we've talked about on Patreon exactly how you determine what that is. So that's one of the things I'm doing. Not only am I taking that extract and spraying it all over the pastures, but also taking a portion of it. Make sure you, folks, this is an important thing. If you have woody materials that you're going to use in your next compost pile, inoculate that with your extract as well. And we've done all that. I think we've done videos on that on Patreon as well.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, sure. So we go in a little more detail there, but you got to have a good pile. And I mean, it's got to be really good stuff. And when you aerate it, if you have any opportunity for any bad stuff to be in that pile, one way to eliminate that is by aerating it. So you want to, and then you want a fair amount of air going across that stuff. So that's another really good way of being able to keep the good stuff and not so much of the bad. And folks, if you hear a bunch of banging around there, that's William getting water out of this thing. Yeah, and
sorry about that.
Making a lot of noise. So yeah, other farm news. So Michelle's finally finished the lab tech from Dr. Ingham today. She finished her last final. It's a rather lengthy final process when you go through that, and she finally got that done. And now the incessant worrying and all the other stuff that goes along with it that she unnecessarily worries about is now hopefully gone, at least until she goes into the next part.
Yeah, yeah. But now he's starting his first session, what, tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
And then I start my first session Thursday.
Yeah, so she's already gotten through, but while she was doing that, I was working on how to make these perfect biocomplete piles. Now, technically, I can't call it biocomplete, but I'm aware of what the standards are, and the compost we're producing and the extract we're producing far exceeds the minimum. When I say far exceeds, y'all, I'm talking like far, far and away exceeds this stuff. So before I forget, because I almost said this and got past it. If you have woody materials that you're going to use in your compost pile and you have a good pile and you're making good extract out of that, pre-inoculate your stuff.
Oh, you said that, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I want to make sure I just demonstrate what exactly is happening. So when you're taking that extract, you got a fungal component in there as well. And that's the biggest reason. You also have a bacterial component in there, but when you're sticking it on, let's say, wood chips, well, the only ones that are going to find real food in there is going to be your fungus.
Right.
Which is a good thing. I know everybody throws around fungus like it's a bad thing, folks. Yes, there is a difference between bad and good fungus. So the stuff we're looking at it under a microscope, if you see little tiny fuzzy stuff, it's almost always going to be bad.
And also the bad stuff doesn't survive typically in a highly aerobic environment.
That's exactly why I'm glad you pointed that out, because not only those guys, the ciliates, which are bad, and a number of other things cannot survive. That's why I've been taking whatever I have, no matter what, even though I know this compost is good enough to make the extract right there in a bucket, I'm still aerating it for a couple of hours just to be absolutely sure that the stuff I have in there is all the good guys, because the bad guys can't survive in an oxygen-rich environment, just like William said. So that's always going to be our go-to way. Man, we packed a whole lot into that farm section. So, I mean, honestly, there's a lot of good tips in there. I know Eric's handling the tips on the program these days, but I'm wanting to go into more detail, probably spend less time talking about the bad stuff. I mean, some of the esoteric I'll get into a little bit. I know a lot of people, judging by the emails, seem to be really digging that.
Yeah, talking about esoteric, I'm reading the Quadrivium right now.
Yeah.
Dang, it opens your eyes as to, like, the meaning of numbers and what the, you know, the bad guys, you know, how they view a lot of this stuff. It opens your eyes to quite a bit.
Well, when you say reading the Quadrivium, are you talking about,
yeah,
you're teaching yourself the Quadrivium?
I'm reading through the book called the Quadrivium.
Is it about the Quadrivium?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, this is first, like a fiction or?
It's not, no, it's not a fiction. It goes through, I'll have to show you the book itself, but it goes through a lot of the symbols that are used to, right now I'm in the numbers section. It goes through the symbols that are used to represent numbers through like history, through cultures and all that stuff, but it really opens your eyes as to how many of these symbols are used in everyday life. And then also, it, like, very rarely does it seem to be a good thing.
Well, that's the thing. So folks know, okay, classic education once considered, but when America still, this is one of those things. So anybody into the esoteric, you might want to just tune in right now. Even if you're not, you might find this interesting. About 150 years ago, two things. Now this is off the top of my head, so give me a break if I'm a little bit off. About 150 years ago, two very distinct things happened in America. One thing was added to it, and it was of a religious nature. I'm not even going to cover it right now. And one thing was removed from it. And what was removed was the one-room schoolhouse. John Taylor Gatto talks about this in great length. My buddies at the Texas Boys probably know exactly what I'm... I know they know what I'm talking about. Well, in that one-room schoolhouse, what was taught was classical education. And that consisted, I mean, ever since the time of probably Aristotle, of what was called the trivium and the quadrivium. The trivium consisted, which means in Latin, three roads. It consisted of grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And using that form of grammar, logic, and rhetoric in that trivium method gave you basically a mental antivirus. So it was really hard to hoodwink anybody that was trained in grammar, logic, and rhetoric, which was the trivium, right? Now, just as a little side note, once upon a time, if you were a slave in ancient Rome and you purchased your freedom, which was entirely possible, and you purchased your freedom, you were required by law to learn the trivium. And the reason why is because it was purposely withheld from slaves, because then all of a sudden they're given that mental antivirus that showed them how they were easily kept in slavery.
Okay, so far, the trivium takes care of the verbal aspect, right? The quadrivium seems to be taking care of the visual aspect, there's like symbolism and stuff like that that you won't... It seems to be like you won't be hoodwinked by some of the symbolism that they throw in your face.
Well, that's part of it. Well, the trivium, which is basically you're asking the questions who, what, where, when, why, and how, and you have to do it in that order. If you don't do it, because if you look at the news, 9 times out of 10, they're giving you the why and the how before they gave you the who, what, where, and when. Now, I'm simplifying this to a great extent. Now, the quadrivium, you didn't learn until you mastered the trivium. Now, the quadrivium is basically four roads. So there's music, there's arithmetic, there's music, there's, man, it's been a while since I've been
to astronomy, and then there's...
Astronomy's the last one.
I don't remember. I've just gotten through the arithmetic part.
Yeah, it's a little embarrassing because I should know this better than I do because I used to teach.
I think it's geometry.
Yeah, geometry, yep. And then music, arithmetic.
But I want to say it's not like 1 + 1 = 2.
Right.
It's learning system. It's almost the permaculture approach to learning math. It's learning like
it's the systems learning.
Yeah, it's yes. Systems learning.
And the idea is that you could give anybody the trivium. This is why this was systematically removed from the one-room schoolhouse around 150 years ago, a little more than that, but you get the point, to intentionally make us stupid. In fact, if you doubt me, go check out a woman named Charlotte Isherby wrote a book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, probably on the shelf down there right now. And she goes into greater detail. In fact, she was the one that actually gave Anthony Sutton all the information regarding Skull and Bones. And her dad was a member of Skull and Bones. I mean, this woman was astonishing. I think she's still around. But anyway, she wrote that book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. You got people like John Taylor Gatto. All these people have basically proven beyond all doubt that the American public has been intentionally dumbed down. And the only place you're going to learn the trivium and the quadrivium these days is in a highfalutin, stick your pinky up kind of boarding school. You're not going to learn that.
Then.
Or Jesuit education sometimes.
Yeah.
People turned it, the Jesuits, I believe, still teach it in some of their educational facilities. So unless you, because when I learned this, I was like, okay, I had to teach myself. And then once you learn it, there's no unlearning it. So, and it can also be frustrating when you learn these sort of things. Folks, these are things you need to be passing on to your not only yourself, because it's not that hard to learn. Once you learn what all the what you learn, what the common logical fallacies are, or the fallacious arguments, you know when you're being lied to right off. But at the same time, everybody else around you, some of you already have it. You already have this, you don't know what to call it, but you're already using it and you don't even know how or why. So this could explain your brain. In fact, if you're listening to this podcast, it's a really good chance that you already use the trivium. You just don't know that you're doing it. So when you learn how to do that, when you learn how to take this grammar, logic, and rhetoric, you learn this classical education, it makes it that much tougher for people, especially politicians, to hoodwink.
Okay, so take a break from whatever news source you go to, learn the trivium, and then go back to that news source and see what happens.
When I taught you, what were you doing? Dad, that's an appeal to authority.
Yeah.
Or that's a red herring.
But you also realize, like, the ones that you kind of use just, you know, just out of like learned or written or rote behavior or whatever.
We all do it just as a matter of communication, but there's times where it can be exploited.
Yeah.
And there's times where really it can be used as in all cases these days, it's used as a means of manipulation. So this is, man, I know we went kind of long in the tooth on this, but I didn't expect to get into the trivium and the quadrivium, but that's what we do. All right. So we're going to drift on in. We don't have anything for Pastor Lon today, I guess. I mean, he's up to his eyeballs with a number of things. So, maybe next week. All right. So, bad news, good news section for the folks out there that are just tuning in. This is your first podcast. For every one bad news, we give you two good ones. All right. So, this one's really bad. And I debated whether or not I was even going to talk about it because anything even vaguely related to, quote, COVID, I've just kind of left out of it. Not because I'm afraid to touch the subject. I mean, obviously, if I talk about the USS Liberty, pretty much nothing's off the table, although I haven't given you the full extent of what I know about that and a number of other things. But I'll leave that up to you and you clever, you people out there that are using the trivium to figure it out for yourselves. Maybe we can talk about that when I'm ready to go scorched earth, because that's exactly what will happen if I tell you the full extent.
Yeah, when we're ready to burn this place down.
Yeah, because that's exactly, I mean, we've already experienced some weird stuff already, so we'll leave it there. Okay, so straight into this bad news, and I got to point this out. Okay, this one comes from Natural News and child killers. CDC data shows that over 18,000 U.S. children died suddenly after the COVID jab rollout. Now, I'm looking at this number. Steve Kirsch has done a lot of work on this. I'm talking unimpeachable stuff. And, of course, none of the mainstream prostitutes are going to cover this. None of them, including the ones over at Faux News, which some people seem to think is Fox, which is really, really nothing more than another, they're as bad as the others. Anyway, 2020, they got this, all deaths were like 231,000. But the excess deaths, I don't know how they determined that exactly, was 40,000. Well, that was 2020. Now, post-COVID vaccine rollout, every year it's gone up. First year, we're talking 2021, was 78,000. 2022, it went down, strangely enough, down to 39,000. And then, basically from 2021, well, I don't know that it necessarily went down, but basically from 2021 to 2022 has been 117,000. That ain't even counting this year.
Wow.
And these are children. Young adults age 0 to 44. I guess that ain't all children. I mean, the article title is a little bit misleading on that. So that's 0 to 44, and that's what we know of.
Yeah, I mean, why on earth would you get an experimental drug injected into your child?
Well,
like everybody had to inherently like have some sort of feeling like, okay, something's up with this, whether you got it or not. It seems like most people at least were thinking, there's a risk with this.
So
despite what the news and all of them are telling you, like just interacting with people day to day, that's what it seems like.
You know what I think? I didn't plan it this way, and I know you didn't either, but I think it goes right back to what we discussed a moment ago. When you don't have, think about this, y'all. The ability to read only enables you to be a higher functioning slave if you don't have a systematic way of determining whether or not what you're being told is true or lies. And most people don't have that framework. And I didn't realize just how many, even people that did, surrendered that understanding to just abject fear. And think about everybody that told you everything you thought you knew about the whole matter was a liar, was a profligate liar, whether it was a politician or a pundit or some prostitute on the media screen. Everybody that did it was a liar. Everybody that told you that was under Operation Mockingbird from the CIA. It's been going on since the 1950s. And people like Sean Hannity have the audacity to sit there and wear the CIA pin right there on his lapel.
Shout out to Kill the Mockingbirds.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure that's part of why they named it that. Yeah,
that's exactly why they named it that way.
Well, I mean, when you get down to brass tacks on all this, you know, it's, I remember being very frustrated and angry because people couldn't see beyond this. And then, you know, I didn't intend to talk about this trivium, but really that's what enables you to give you a mental antivirus to know when you are being lied to.
Yeah.
When they give you the, like I said, it has to be in this order. Who, what, where, when, why, and how. In the old days, if you look at old debates like the Lincoln-Douglas debate, they would call each other on the fact that, oh, okay, you're using, they would call each other on the logical fallacies, and everybody in that audience knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Other debates as well, going all the way back to the Revolution. We're talking people that were autodidacts. This is yet another reason why everybody out there should give some serious thought about learning the trivia.
If nothing else, it gives you terms and definitions to that gut feeling you have when these politicians talk.
That's a very good point. Very good point. All right, so into the good news. All right, Vladdy the pimp daddy at Putin. Man, this dude, he just banned 5G in Russia. All towers to be dismantled.
I guess the bees will be saved then.
Yeah, yeah. Good night, man. I think that's good news.
Yeah.
I think that's really good news when you get down to brass tacks here. I mean, because really, when we stop to consider all this stuff with 5G, I know the Germans have done a lot of work on it. Man, they were concerned when it was 3G.
Hold on. The Chinese make this massive update with lasers, and Putin bans 5G all in the same period.
Well,
seems like that's a heads up there.
Well, you know what? I mean, the 5G is not faster than fiber optics.
No.
So we got fiber practically at every single place out there. It's all over the place. We got fiber. We live very rurally, and we got fiber out here.
Well, okay, that was one benefit of COVID, is that all these kids out here in the mountains had to go to school virtually. So apparently it was like a government-funded project to get fiber. I guess fiber optic was the best route or something like that, but they put up fiber optic all through these mountains.
Yeah, so you got fiber. That's a double-edged sword too. I mean, but you're not at least getting cooked the way you are with a 5G.
That's
and then
what I was
5G
saying.
Towers to buy schools.
Well, that's what I was thinking, was like, okay, if they just made this improvement, I don't even know if it's connected. This is a farmer talking about lasers and 5G. But if China made this massive improvement where they can discharge the heat from lasers, and then at the same time, Russia is like, all right, time to get rid of this 5G stuff. Like, it seems too coincidental to not be connected. Like, China can now cook us with 5G for an extended period of time.
Well, I think, actually, if you read the article, Vladdy, the pimp daddy's talking about, and I call him that, y'all, look at the way he walks. Look, he's got that limp. He's got that KGB, that limp where he's like, he's got his hand next to his gun all the time. So yeah, he walks like a straight up pimp, and not a permaculture is my passion kind of pimp, but, you know, old school, you know, huggy bear kind of pimp. So anyway, no, if you read the article, they're saying that they see it as a clear and present danger to their people. And they're thinking, okay, well, we don't need this. We really don't. And there's a lot of people up here, you know, in Madison County where we live that are, you know, bitterly opposed to this. And I totally get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it. I mean, I don't want this 5G crap around anyway. And in fact, you know, whether it's messing with the bees, you know, whether it's the neonicotinoid things, whatever it is with the bees, look, man, maybe we ought to be taking a little bit of, I was thinking before that Snowden was out of his mind to go to Russia.
Yeah.
Not so sure now.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure.
And to top it off, that 5G is consistently worse. Like, it's slower.
Yeah.
Like, the apps just, the phone, there's no point even pulling out your phone if you're on 5G because it doesn't freaking work.
Or getting a new phone. It ain't moving no faster than the old one.
Yeah, how is this phone slower than that one, the one that we're recording on?
Yeah, I don't get it. I really don't understand it because I'm like, hold on, my old phone before the new phone seemed to function a lot better.
Yeah, so, that other one seems to function a lot better without it having service. I've noticed that.
How about that? All right, so the other good news story, and it's not even an article. I'm going to talk about, regretfully, man, I really try not to do this, but I got to, that Oliver Anthony, that guy who's basically gone viral, and I'm a little bit wondering, I'm still trying to work this out in my mind, but here's what I noticed, and I told you and your mom about it earlier. Okay, so he puts out this song. It's a good song. I'll be the first to admit it. But when I'm seeing black people doing, and I know it's an easy way to get YouTube views, just do a review, have people watch you as you're listening to it, and maybe you act as if you're whatever, but I've never seen more black YouTube channels play a song and then show full solidarity with it, and it's a type of music that they typically would not listen to.
My buddy from jiu-jitsu was like, man, that guy just looks like a mean guy to work with. Like, he just beat you up for no reason on the construction site.
Well, I saw him. I went to his channel.
Yeah.
And by the way, they must have took down the first video because, I mean, that thing was blowing up like nobody's business. I don't know. Maybe my phone's acting weird or whatever. Because the guy apparently lives in the next town over from us. So I sent him an email saying, hey, bro, you want to come in the studio, have something to eat? Come on over. And I'm sure he's being inundated.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, he's going to be very well known. He's probably going to make a lot of money, have a good career, and I hope and pray that he doesn't sell out.
Yeah.
But the thing that I find astonishing is that people who ordinarily would never listen to a song like this are listening to it. It's almost like an anthem, but it's even that doesn't make sense to me. It's a good song, but it just seems like something else is afoot. It doesn't make sense to me.
I have a feeling why it might feel a little bit off. And I could be wrong on this. This is just the playing devil's advocate. What if it broke? Maybe the reason it feels off is because he tapped into the worldwide zeitgeist right now. He tapped into that and it almost overrode the algorithm. The algorithm that's set on every social media platform. Because if you look at the words of everything he says in that song, all of it is unifying, clearly, because people who don't even listen to that music are doing reviews on it. And it's an easy way to get views. But despite that, it's unifying. It's not something anybody would promote because it doesn't cause that divide. So I wonder if it's unsettling because we just all witnessed somebody override the algorithm.
I don't know. That might be it. I mean, that's a good theory. I don't really know. What I do know, I do like the song. And I like some of the other music that he had out there. I am just wondering, I've never seen so many black folks play a country song in my life. And
well, it's also on the heels of that one song, Not in My Town or something like that.
Yeah.
It's on the heels of that one, which was, I guess, divisive. I don't know. Some people had an issue with it. It doesn't seem like anybody has an issue with this one.
No. I don't know. There's something. Maybe you're right. Maybe you just tapped in, like you said, that zeitgeist out there that people are universally feeling. I suspect that might be it. It just seems crazy to me that people who historically would never, it's one thing to hear a message like this from Immortal Technique and to hear black people talk about it.
Yeah.
And even in most cases there, most black folks don't even get what Immortal Technique is talking about.
Right.
You always know because it'll be one of his old things and he's saying something profound and you say, well, what did you think? And they say, it was all right. That means you didn't understand a word he just said in this thing.
Or the people that interview him and then you realize that the people that are interviewing him don't have any idea what he's talking about. They just think they're interviewing another rapper.
Right. Exactly. They have absolutely no idea what they're getting into. But with this guy here, I'm just going to reserve a little bit of judgment. I love what he did. I love the song. I love what he's doing. But I'm like, I don't understand how this thing is getting this kind of traction unless maybe it's like you said, I don't get it. Or it may just be the, you know, where I see people doing reviews on a song. I'm like, why would somebody watch somebody else review a song? And you had a theory on that one.
Well, it's just a lazy way to make content. It is. I mean, there's so many doggone review channels of other people's content. Like, the same content gets passed around, I don't even know how many times, which might be where the majority of his views are coming from. So if you're seeing, like, if you're going to his video and you're clicking on it and, like, you're seeing maybe a lower view count than you think it should be, it's because a lot of other people are seeing it through other people's pages.
Well,
I don't know how they get around that with the copyright issues. I guess he could take up a claim with it. There are some other comedians that take up claims with it. There are podcasts that review other comedy podcasts.
I don't understand all this. I mean, I'm something of a Luddite when
it comes
to all this.
It's just a lazy way to make content.
Maybe that's what it is. I mean, maybe that's exactly what it comes down to. It just seems, I mean, it's good news in that people, I think, are finally getting, you know,
and also, if you can make a video attached to something that's going viral, that'll also boost your views and stuff.
Maybe that's what it's all about. It just seems perplexing to me because I thought, okay, when this thing happens, people will wake up. It happens, nobody wakes up. And then later on, I'm thinking, okay, this thing happens. Okay, they start demanding this for your children. Maybe people will wake up. Still, nobody wakes up. And then all of a sudden, I'm seeing this groundswell over a song.
Okay, something just clicked. Maybe the reason, potentially, it's getting pushed is because it sounds like giving up. Like, the song gives you the vibe of just giving up. Like, there is no hope. There is just, like, we're just giving up. There's rich men north of Richmond.
Well, there's no call to action.
There's no,
song.
There. Yeah, it requires you to do absolutely nothing
you
different.
You got a point there. You got a point. I mean, to a certain extent, I guess you could say you're kind of commiserating in the song, but there is no necessary, I don't recall hearing a call to action. No. Maybe you might be onto something there, son.
Because William Elliott Whitmore, he puts out songs that have been similar to it.
Yeah.
That have calls to action.
Yeah.
Like that Mutiny song.
Yeah. But I mean, in this guy right here, he's, you know, I didn't intend to spend a lot of time on what I've talked about here today. But the point being, I'm just going to reserve a little bit of judgment. I mean, I like what's going on. I just don't understand what's going on because I thought maybe you're right there because there was nothing necessarily offensive. He's just basically, it's a national commiseration over high prices. People in Washington, you know, they're getting richer. Everybody else is getting poorer. And we're going to talk about some of the ways to mitigate some of that. But before we do, we are definitely going to go to my homeboy, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, connections. If I were to distill permaculture down to one word, it would be connections. The beneficial connections between elements is the essence of permaculture design. And it is the number of connections in a system that lead to stability, not how many different components you include. You also don't need to be an expert in every discipline to create a permaculture design. You simply need to know the fundamental behaviors and characteristics of each element you want to place. Think of yourself as a general contractor, and the blueprint you are following is the mainframe permaculture design. It is best not to be too rigid in your design. You must allow room for the system to demonstrate its own evolutions, and be ready to step in and make adjustments as needed. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider, and if you are in need of permaculture t-shirts, or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
That's my dog. And he said it right there, man. That's exactly the reason what drew me to permaculture.
It's another example of system learning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. going, I mean, and you had, yeah. So we walked right into all this. Yeah, it's amazing. Did. It's amazing how all this just kind of tied right into it.
Good job, Eric.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric. Even though you had no idea we were going to be talking about this sort of thing. But yeah, that's exactly the, that's, you know, even go back to Fukuoka. One Straw Revolution. People always, I tell everybody, read that book. It's an easy read. It's a fantastic read. It's a poetic read. And Fukuoka basically, that was his thing. He was like, okay, you don't need to be an expert in anything. Mm-mm. You just need to understand relationships. And that's exactly what screamed out to me in permaculture. And honestly, I think part of the reason why certain people struggle, I think, for example, one doctor you and I both know of,
yeah,
could not get, because he lives in such a reductionistic worldview, and it just came to me right now as part, as well, I mean, a lot of the other stuff going on with him, we won't get into, but part of the reason why he couldn't understand that systems view or the relationship view that Eric just talked about is because he was so reductionistically brainwashed.
Right.
Okay, you got high blood pressure, I'll give you this lisinopril. You got this, I'll give you this.
Which is the issue with the public school system or and even private school system is that they teach you like all of the details without teaching you any of the systems first. You should learn probably the system first and then learn details of the system, right?
Right.
Like it would be helpful that you're working, like you would know that you're working at like a lumber mill before you start like fixing a particular part of that lumber mill. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You, that's the problem though, is that this systems thinking is for certain careers, you know, it just doesn't work out so well. But yeah, once again, hat tip to my man, Eric. Don't forget to go check him out. Man, that was right on point. All right, before we get into it, before we get into the main topic, remember, EMP Shield, y'all, $50 off with promo code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. Do I even need to go? Now, we've talked about Vladdy the Pimp Daddy before, but I'm not even going to go into all the reasons why. He might provide all the reasons in the world you may need an EMP Shield. So, yeah, $50 off with promo code PERMA on anything they have. All right, so the main topic. Folks, I'm going to go right back to Eric on this one. The first person that I heard mention anything, and believe me, I'm something or have been historically something of a news junkie. The first person I heard say anything in any form whatsoever about machine learning or this chat GPT was Eric.
Yeah.
And you know, at first I was thinking, and I remember my first response to Eric when he showed me what this thing did, long before anybody else had even started talking about it. And I was like, good night, man. Oh, this is crazy. And then I kind of fooled around with it myself. Your mom was in the presence, and even she was, it was almost scary because what I asked it to do was, I said, explain something in the perspective of Dr. Elaine Ingham. Mm. And I let your, and I said, do it in under 300 words. We're sitting there in the truck and I had, and literally it popped it right up, took a second for it to do it, handed it over to your mom and her jaw hit the floor. So I'm listening to Diary of a CEO. That's once again, boy, I'm giving a whole lot of hat tips to Eric because he turned me on to that podcast and a lot of fantastic information on there, self-help type of stuff. And he had a guest, and I can't, he had actually two of them on there. And then there's been other people I've listened to as well that have covered this topic. And people have gone right back to this chat GPT and the other machinations of it and things like it. And what he said, I swear I was thinking one of the guests that was on there, I believe it was on that show, and I swear I was already thinking it, but I just kind of plowed it away. The first thing I said when Eric, I said, man, no kid will ever do a book report ever again.
Yeah.
This is going to make some lazy people out there. And then this guy says something, and he's something of an academic, that he says, despite what everybody thinks, and I swear I was already thinking this, says, despite what everybody thinks, it will not be the blue-collar jobs that go away this time. These white collar jobs are going to go the way of the dodo. And he said the worst thing about it is that the people in the white collar jobs will be the ones that use it most.
Mm-hmm.
And then specifically, what did he point out? I'm saying all this. I'm getting to a point here, y'all. He said all this to say, you know what? Are you really going to need a bunch of doctors who all they do is going to look at the physician's desk reference when you could have one doctor that could manage some AI tools and basically manage what 50 doctors could with just one guy?
Yeah.
So how many doctors are going to hit the bricks? Nurses, you're going to need people that they're going to be less likely to hit the bricks.
Right.
Because they're doing some of the more physical things that are required.
Yeah, the doctor, like where Emily works, I mean, the doctors do like very little hands-on interaction with the with people. And it shows because their bedside manner sucks. Like, yeah. Historically, doctors' bedside manner sucks. And then the nurses are the ones that actually have good relationships with people.
Right, but, okay, so doctors will be all the people doing these computer codes, these IT people. Well, all these machine learning, they're doing the code themselves.
Yeah.
You're going to be out of a job.
Writers.
Yes, I'm glad you pointed that out. So what kind of writers?
All kinds of, like, script writers, like, book writers, anything that's maybe even fiction writers. I don't know if AI or necromancy can come up with fiction.
Well, I looked at my book. It came in the mail today, and I'm sitting there looking at it, and it did occur to me. I'm like, man, I wonder how many books are being written by AI.
It's entirely possible. You don't have to pay an AI writer or an AI writer to write something.
This thing is making all the sense in the world. So what are some of the careers? Now, I'm going to circle, man, I hate using that expression, circle back to using, to go, it's not the same topic that we covered before. I want you to reconsider a few things here. So think about all the things that are required. Let me say it this way. Think about all the jobs out there that are absolutely going to go away. In fact, Ed Milet on his show had the same guy that Diary of a CEO had on there, but Ed Milet asked him questions in a different way and got the last 5 minutes, I guess, of the show. He says, look, man, I know you've been holding back. I'm paraphrasing, but he says, look, this is one of the biggest AI experts on the planet. And his name is Mo. I can't think of his last name. And the guy's reaction floored me, where he's trying to look at all the positive throughout this thing, talks about some of the cautions, and then he says, okay, where are we in 5 years from now? And the guy basically said, dude, it's unrecognizable. And the people that historically, the hardest people to get to wake up regarding the status quo out there and what's going on, believe it or not, are people in high-paying white-collar jobs.
You know one thing AI for sure can't do? Make good compost.
That's okay. Well, you're getting right into what I'm going to talk about. You're getting right into what I'm talking about. So all these people that historically are reluctant to wake up to the realities, typically the hardest people to wake up are people in white collar jobs. I hate this whole white collar, blue collar things, because as a blue collar guy, believe it or not, a lot of times you're making more than most so-called white collar people. Anyway, that's another thing.
Was
altogether.
It a higher functioning slave? Is that what that was?
What?
That term? Higher functioning slave, the white collar people?
Well, you're just a corporate sharecropper.
Okay.
That's what you are. So anyway, you got all these jobs that are going to go the way of the dodo. But like I said, all these people that are reluctant to wake up to this are going to be the very people whose jobs are most likely to be taken away. But whose jobs are going to be safe? Folks, I'm going to get right back to what William was saying there. Think about things this thing can't do. And is it going to be something you enjoy? I don't know. But I know at the end of the day, find me an AI out there that can go out there and run conduit, pull wire through it, terminate the wires, and make things work. Find me an AI out there that can figure out why some woman threw her unmentionables down the doggone toilet and clogged up the entire system.
Or put 5 space heaters on the same circuit.
There you go. Oh, my goodness, man. That used to kill us at the VA, man. All these breakers going off every winter. And you knew the reason why is because every woman's cold, and they got these space heaters under the desk. And you're like, okay, where's the space heater? I don't have a space heater. Yes, you do.
It's 10 degrees warmer in here. Why? Yeah. Where's the space heater?
Where's the space heater? And I'm like, okay, so I'll get you another circuit where we can run your space heater. But the point I'm getting at, what I'm really trying to point out here, there's no AI that's going to run the HVAC systems. You know how many data centers I've built? Folks, I mean, I've been on some of the biggest on the planet. And they require a cooling system that'll blow your mind. And it has backup to the backup to the backup because this stuff can't go offline. In fact, a lot of the work I did in the electric trade toward the end of it was primarily data centers. And they were going up everywhere. Everywhere. And so HVAC, farmers, pipe fitters, repair people.
Entertainment. Entertainment is another thing they can't do.
Like I don't think so.
Okay, so
depends on the nature of the entertainment.
Until they get to the point where they can make it like unnoticeable by people. But Joel from Kill the Mockingbirds has been doing little segments on Instagram where he's using the Joel AI voice. And he doesn't announce that it's the Joel AI voice until the very end. And it sounds very, very close to him, but there's still something off. Yeah. I think, like, and even like these very high tech holograms that they have now, it's still slightly off.
That's because it is intentionally done so. What the version you have of ChatGPT is like five versions down of what they currently have. Apparently, they've had this thing for years anyway. Mm. And this is just, and then like that guy Mo said, I forget where the IQ was. Like, Einstein was at, what, 160 IQ? This thing is about 150 right now. And then here within 6 months, this thing will dwarf Einstein. And we're talking like 6 months. And then here within a couple of years, it will have a level of intelligence that is uncharted. Mm. But at the end of the day, folks, you got to be thinking about how you can... Maybe this is why they need a population reduction. Because now, think of all the jobs they don't need when you got ChatGPT and other versions of it out there that are doing this sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the powers that shouldn't be are really that wicked.
Maybe we need an EMP.
Well, if we...
Maybe we're supposed to have one now.
If we had an EMP, well, according to William Fortune, the guy that wrote 1 Second After, according to the actuaries, we're talking 90% of the population in the United States will be dead in the first year.
Well, never mind on that.
Yeah, so that's 300 million people dead. And
okay, well, let's get everybody prepared first. Let's let them know what's going to happen, and then we'll just kill all the electronics. Look, and then we'll be ready.
This is a real concern, but yeah. I mean, but also part of it is making me wonder, okay, well, in order for them to make a lot of these things unfold the way they are, they kind of need this thing. But be thinking of those things and maybe as a plan B. Like, I'm not going to kid y'all. I'm actually thinking about going back to school to go get my, I'm already a journeyman electrician. I'm thinking about going back to see about getting my HVAC license. And there's a reason I'm thinking about doing that. I'm thinking, okay, I already have all these different modalities of making money and doing other things under my belt. It ain't going to hurt to have one more. And especially in terms of refrigeration, if I want to, you know, wind up doing a butchery business, okay, you need people to butcher. Okay, is that something ChatGPT can do? No.
No.
In fact, it comes down to all the physical type of things that this thing cannot do, nor can it requisition. So when you're thinking, or maybe a kid out there is thinking, oh, I'm going to go off to college. I mean, we live by a college, you know.
Yeah,
and every kid I ask over there, for the most part, what their major is, it's basically a degree in worthlessness.
Nonsense.
Yes.
Or they're there for sports or nursing.
Yep.
That's like the three main things that the college has is like there's the sports program, there's the nursing, and then there's just garbage.
Yeah, and the one kid I spoke to, I like the kid, and he's getting a degree in something to do with sports. And I'm like, okay, well, that's pretty top heavy. I didn't say that, but I'm sitting here thinking, okay, well, do you need a defensive coordinator anymore with ChatGPT or whatever? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, you're going to have this stuff will be used to its full extent because number one, and I'm not trusting like Mo did in the interview. They're hoping the better angels of our nature shine through. Well, where in history have we ever seen that? Where cite one time in history where we didn't have this high this ability to do something and didn't do it.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, we blew up a nuclear bomb multiple times, not even knowing what would happen.
I mean, the nuclear bomb. Yeah. I haven't seen that movie that's out right now, but I know the story very well.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
And then, you know, they had no idea what was going to happen out there. And then if you, in the desert, when they were testing it, of course, all the downwinders, well, there's a bunch of people that died.
Still dying.
Yeah. In that area. So, you know, all the people that, you know, suffered from the downwind, you know, Bikini Islands, all the testing that went on out there. Then they had soldiers and airmen jumping all over those ships, even though they knew the radiation would kill them. And they did it on purpose. Operation Shad, they shot these people up. Look, I said all that to say this. Every single time there's been some combat multiplier, lazy people and the overwhelming majority of this nation in America is lazy. Lazy unto death, like nothing I've ever seen before. So do you really think this thing isn't going to get out of control?
Right.
I'm not hopeful. I mean, this guy is thinking positively about where he hopes it goes. And then Ed Mylett just cornered him at the end of the interview. And the guy basically said, look, we're talking, we are in deep crap. That's how he put it. Well, he said it differently, but you get the point. So, folks, I guess I said all that to say, be considering those jobs that aren't easily replaced. If not by, you're not going to replace a chef unless they come up with one of them things like on Star Trek where you talk into it. You're not going to replace a chef. You're not going to replace a farmer. But then again, you may need a lot fewer of them if you got a lot fewer people out there. Speaking of chefs, we got one coming up right now.
Hey, it's Chef Keith Snow with HarvestEating.com and FoodStorageFeast.com. I wanted to discuss something I think is really important for everybody out there to at least consider, and that is establishing a fat freezer. The idea is a small chest freezer, preferably one not made in China, that will break in 14 months. Try to find one that's at least assembled in America and one that has good repair histories. And you don't need a giant chest freezer, just one that's large enough to hold about 100 pounds of fat. The fats that I suggest are as follows, and this is what I keep. Butter, good brands of butter. I would suggest checking a company called Azure Standard, A-Z-U-R-E, Azure Standard. It's sort of a delivery service where they will drop off at what they call drops, and you can go to those drops and pick up your food. You order on their website. They have great prices, a really big selection. They do have some excellent butter choices. Also, I try to get grass-fed butter from either Ireland or New Zealand. There's several brands, but get whatever you can afford. I also keep quite a bit of duck fat. I like to buy that in cans and jars, and this is kind of the same for all fats. If possible, I like to get them frozen in cans or jars. I keep beef tallow and I keep coconut oil, and these things are stuffed into my fat freezer. So do some simple arithmetic to see how much butter, for example, and I think this is one of the most important fats, figure out how much butter you use in a year, buy it and freeze it. I would say get at least 20 pounds of duck fat, maybe 20 pounds of tallow as well. If you like lard, you can go for lard. Just make sure it comes from pastured pork. The commercial lard in the store, can't say that's a great thing, so try to avoid that. But once this fat freezer is up and running and stocked, you just forget about it. When and if you need fat, you'll rest easy knowing you've made a critical investment and you traded dollars that are inflating away pretty quickly into shelf-stable, nutritious, and recipe-friendly fat. Another benefit to a fat freezer is, and I'm talking chest freezer, not stand-up freezer. If you lose power even for a few days, the thermal mass of all that frozen fat will keep it super cold. It may never even rise above freezing. And if it does, it's not going to hurt your fat to warm up a little bit. and then be frozen again. So it's a lot different than storing something super, you know, fragile like meat, because if that heats up, then you can have a big problem. I learned that the hard way years ago. Also, I do suggest making sure you have some backup power. In my case, we have generators, and we also keep on hand boat gas tanks. So, you know, remember those old small boats, those kind of red gas tanks with a little pump thingy? The one I have holds, I think, 6 gallons. So the generator holds about a gallon plus the auxiliary tank, another 6 gallons. That can keep that thing running for many days and keep critical things like freezers and refrigerators up and running. But again, with a small chest freezer that's filled with frozen fat, I mean, that would have to be, you would have to lose power for a long time for that to be a problem. Now, I don't suggest intermingling fat with other foods because fat can absorb flavors from other foods like frozen onions or things like that in particular. So just keep it strictly a fat freezer. And once it's filled, I like to place a laminated list. It's a type of, or maybe it's a laminated sleeve, and I keep it on there and I can slide it in and out and make changes to the list of fat that's in there. So if I add more, I just will cross it off and make a note. So when the Shiat hits the fan, your friends with the Teslas and the side-by-sides and the lifted pickup trucks, they're going to be up a creek without a paddle, and you, with your established fat freezer, will be eating duck fat roasted potatoes and laughing all the way to the bank. So I do suggest you all do this. If you want to learn how to cook with stored foods and how to create lots of other stashes of food and easy ways to cook with them, go and check out foodstoragefeast.com. There's over 50 videos there showing you great recipes to do just that. And if you decide that that's something for you, use the code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A, and save $25 at checkout. And I want to thank all of the good folks at Perma Pastures Farm for the opportunity to speak to you pimp casters. Have a great day and take care.
Fat freezer. Well, how many times have I talked in the past about the one thing that very few people in the preparedness movement ever talk about is the most important thing, which is fat.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about, was that like nobody puts back fat.
Nobody ever tells you. I can never understand it when you get 9 calories per gram for fat and only 4 for protein and carbs. Plus, it's a good store in terms of, and like Chef Snow's saying, things go sideways, man. Everybody's thought about the carbs,
yeah,
but fat is the hardest thing. I can find protein in nature. I can find carbs in nature.
And it makes
fat is the, you can find that too, but it's harder to find in nature.
And it makes everything else taste better.
Yep. And you need less of it. I mean, honestly, boy, he's got me thinking about some duck fat fries right now.
Yeah. Or some duck breasts.
Duck fat. Oh, man.
Yeah. All right.
Duck fat roasted potatoes, man.
You can't keep talking about this. You're done with 75 hard, but I'm still in my phase one of part two.
All right. So before we get into it, remember, Harvest Right Freeze Dryers, we've got a link over there. And don't have a discount code or anything like that, but it does help us greatly. So right off the bat, let me start off with Hunter. Hey, Mr. Billy, listen to episode 118 and want to let you know we're still listening and share some knowledge. I was putting on some books I ordered up yesterday, and I thought, he says, poor men invest in pleasure, rich men invest in assets, wise men invest in knowledge. Y'all mentioned in the podcast the Founding Fathers of Cult History, and you might want to do some research on John Dee. Yeah, I'm not going to go too deep into it right now, but yeah, I know the language you're talking. And there's a, everything is not what it seems. It is not. And most people do not even want to hear what the alternative is. So, thanks for pointing that out, Hunter.
Got one from Melodious. You aren't getting emails because we all want to hashtag tip a pimp.
Bam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's the thing is, there's business emails that ain't even coming in. It's not that we said something that just offended everybody, or maybe we did. I don't know. Don't really concern myself about any of that. But
it's
not that
because the email thing is disconnected from what we would be saying on the podcast as well. Like, there's just email issues outside of that.
Well, I can clearly find the demarcation point.
Oh, for sure.
You bring up the USS Liberty and who did it, then all of a sudden everything goes haywire that day.
Yep.
So it is what it is. Good afternoon. I know you were talking about the problems you were having with Patreon in your email. Have you looked into Mighty Networks? I know that Dr. Ken Berry and a few other people are doing it. I have to check it out. Also, I heard you read a comment from Backwoods Butcher 603. He's doing a lot of good in the community. He's a family man in New Hampshire and is teaching his craft to a bullet to cooler. Oh, YouTube. Oh. Bullet to cooler. Okay, it's just weirdly. The syntax is a little bit weird. Both he and Renegade Butchers are planning a competition at SRF, Self-Reliance Festival. There may be another coming out from New York. And anyway, the first Butcher's Throwdown at SRF. Okay, I think that's cool.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got one from user 51211. Today went sideways, but y'all never go backwards. And that was in reference to episode 118, the we're not even sure what to call this one, where everything fell. Everything was falling apart. All that stuff is squared away. We forgot to mention that.
So far.
Last week's episode didn't go out because the phone that we used to record, or the episode on YouTube didn't go out, because the phone we used to record was all of a sudden full of memory, which is an impossibility. Even like the recently deleted album was deleted. So, well, hopefully this records now. Everything
a lot
is restarted,
of weird.
Rewiped, all that stuff.
Yep. Bring up the USS Liberty and all the weird stuff starts happening. How about that? All right, Matthew says, hey, Billy, hope you're doing well. Might be starting a job soon where I can work on a farm to practice his permaculture principles. And I'm hoping to gain some good knowledge and experience. That's awesome, man. Anyway, his question is, he says, I'm a full-time college student and my last semester of college will be happening at the same time as Jeff Lawton's course. He's wondering if he would be able to do both. Yeah, you absolutely can. In fact, I think you got a year to finish his course.
Yeah, I think you have I think you have 12 months to turn in your final design.
Yeah, I think you got a little time there. I think it goes for a year, but yeah, you absolutely got time. Plus, I mean, there's no better permaculture teacher than Jeff Lawton.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there is it'll just floor you how this guy can just spit this stuff out there and he can draw it. Unlike me, he can actually draw.
Oh, and he won't teach until he finds all his markers, all his colors.
Yeah, dude. I mean, he's sitting there. You're watching him put this together, and his ability to not only communicate, but to do it in such a way with drawings and everything else, honestly, Matthew, there is no better permaculture teacher out there.
Yep.
And, yeah, I know his PDC is not inexpensive, but
it's definitely worth it.
Well, look at how much money, all the money we've spent on education.
Yeah.
And it's by far the best money I ever spent, especially when you line it up to what I spent for college.
Oh, yeah.
Which was an absolute. Well, he goes on to say, sometimes my family goes and picks up blueberries on the farm. My dad called this season to see if we can come up. The lady said they won't have any because the crop isn't good due to a lack of sunlight.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Wow. Maybe part of that dimming. More weirdness. Got one from user 7264 on the Fountain app. FYI, Billy and William missed last four shows, including this one. Fountain will not download the show. What is the deal, Fountain? Other shows are working fine, like that guy, Jax.
Huh.
I don't know.
USS Liberty.
That's a good point.
Liberty.
It automatically, like the distributor, the Audio Boom, it is the distributor. It automatically goes to these different podcast hosts. So, I really don't know. It's like not something, like I don't manually upload it to, you know, Fountain, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that
stuff. Just find out who you can't criticize. And like I said, USS Liberty, I'll say it, keep them coming. Because like I said, they're playing games with all kinds of stuff around here. And it is what it is, but I'm not going to shut up. Ain't no doubt about that. All right. So this one here. Okay. So they're in Texas right now. And she's saying that her comfrey was doing great. And it got up to 117 and it died. This is with comfrey in cases like that, where you're in Texas and other places like that, where it's just nasty. You might want to situate a few of it in some shaded spots too.
Well, yeah, but sunshine. if it was established and then it died back because that high temperature, it's probably most likely going to come back up whenever it cools off.
Because we've got some out there that's been not watered, whatever. No. You know, I'm sure it's got a serious roots on it, but right now, but
the point is that it's established.
Yeah, once it's established, you're going to be all right.
Yeah,
but I mean, also consider putting some because. They were talking about how they use it as well in a similar fashion to us. So think about putting some in various places too. It doesn't always need to be in open sun.
Right. Got one from Jed. Watching the timeline of Neo's drama. Do you remember that? Neo, not from The Matrix, but that one singer you brought up last episode. You don't remember that?
Neo,
yeah. Oh, Neo, singer that like criticized the whole trans agenda or whatever. All right, so this is in relation to that. Watching the timeline of Neo's drama is a prime example of why one shouldn't be unequally yoked. He said what he said, his publicist apologized, then he did a 4-minute Instagram video that doubled down, that video got deleted. I've seen very short clips of the unapology, and his sarcasm is taken out of context to make him seem like he is still contrite. It never includes the portion that claims a publicist was speaking for him. Guy probably doesn't even have the passwords to his own account.
Probably the case.
Well, I guess I apologize because I was wrong because I said he like came back and apologized, and apparently it was his publicist, and then he came back down to double down.
Folks, that's a lot of the so-called celebrities out there. I mean, many of these people, believe it or not, you may see the glory, the glitz, the glam, and all that good stuff, but. Take people like Britney Spears, who are absolute slaves. I mean, her and a...
Handlers, you know, not publicists. Handlers.
Yeah, that's exactly what they are. I mean, like that guy with Kanye West, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
I don't even know who half these people are. I just catch the stories on the back end. And most of these people, these publicists or whatever they are, they are actually handlers. A lot of these people are MK Ultra plants. I mean, I'll just keep it real.
Got another one from Jed. Billy, you mentioned pulling the unproductive peach trees. Are they perhaps acting as a sacrificial bait to pests? I've been planting all the squashes and I don't end up with the squash I want, but I always end up with the squash I need. How do you weigh the trade-off of allowing some diseases and pestered plants to remain versus once the junk is gone, the good peach tree is the weakest peach tree on the property? Or do you advocate this method at all?
Well, I'm all about Mark Shepard's stun method when it comes to that. I'm only going to do so much. I'm going to give you what you need. I'm going to give you mulch. I'm going to plant all the necessary things around you. I will treat you as a tree as well as I can. But, hey, here at this farm, it's either get loose or get lost. Because at the end of the day, every tree that does not provide fruit or bad fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. So, in a real circumstances, yeah. That's how it goes. I mean, if this thing, we got two of them down there, that's probably not, well, one of them for sure is probably not going to make it. And I have gone out of my way to give this thing all the mulch it needs. It just tells me that it's just not meant to be there. Or maybe the genetics on that tree, if the soil's good, 9 times out of 10, it's your soil. That's the problem.
If your soil is good. Which in areas that some of the trees have died, it is off a hook. If the soil's good and you put a tree in there and the tree dies, that means there's a genetic issue with the tree, I would assume, and it's not putting out the proper exudates to even, or even like the microbes even know this tree ain't no good because it's not there defending the tree.
Right, exactly. It's not even, the allies are reluctant. So there's only so much I'm ever going to do.
Right.
Because if I got a baby... Look, I even extend this all the way into people, and I've been criticized for it, but I really don't have a problem saying it, I'm not into high maintenance anything. I don't like high maintenance animals. I don't like high maintenance trees. And people can misunderstand that. like when a guy, I remember a guy I worked with, oh, well, you know, he's talking about all these problems. And I'd be like, well, it sounds like you got a girlfriend problem. Oh, she's just high maintenance. And I'm like, well, is that another word for unreasonable? Because that's really what high maintenance is. So I apply that to, I try to apply it to every part of my life.
Sounds like you need some Hickory Ridge soap.
Well, no, I'm saying with when it comes to, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Well, boy, I could tell you stories. But no, the point being is that if anything requires an overabundance of attention, it will not get it here. And I include people in that too. There may be friendships that may have to go by the wayside because they require, or people you work with on a regular basis. One of my biggest frustrations, one thing I absolutely hate, is if you're working and then you line this person out, you show them what they got to do, and then you walk away because you know you explained it well enough to where they should be able to, but then every 5 to 10 minutes, they are disturbing you when you need your brain to move on to the next task. Well, it's the same thing. I said all that. I know you asked about trees, but I'm saying it really needs to find its way if you're going to be any kind of productive. I truly believe that you have got to get rid of every high maintenance, which is another name for unreasonable, relationship in your life, whether it's the dog, whether it's the tree, whether it's the sheep, whether it's the cow. All these things have got to be low maintenance. And Joel Salatin has talked a great deal about this thing, and I couldn't agree more. So be considering that going right back. I'll go right back to your tree example. I'm just not going to put in a whole lot of work. If you can't make it, get loose or get lost. And I mean, that applies to just about everything in my life that I'm able to apply that to, because I got enough on my plate without having to go out here and baby this animal or go out here and baby this tree. So I know that's a wider answer, but I get this question a lot. So I wanted to take my time and offer to a lot of people out there, look, any albatrosses in your life, if you're going to be any kind of productive, if you look at all these people that have done really big things, they've had to eliminate those things and people and places and those things from their lives. Like right now, I can't even name the number of people I know that are in constant nonstop vacation mode. Prices are through the roof. And then there'll be the same people coming with their hats in their hand wanting to borrow money from me.
Yeah.
And the answer is going to be hell to the no, to the no, no, no. You're about to get a serious resounding no when you just made yourself high maintenance on an issue you should have saw coming. Or, hey, when it gets worse, do these high maintenance people, I'm glad I'm covering this. It's going a little bit long, but I need to say this. Be thinking about these high maintenance people in your life. If you find yourself in a situation where you may be without power for 3 months, Uncle Johnny down the road who doesn't know how to do anything, or who sits there drinking beer, watching football game all day, are those the people you're going to want to have around you? It's just like that tree that requires all this extra maintenance. Well, Uncle Johnny could be the human version of that tree, or a cousin, or, you know what? Noah and all the other people on the ark, I'm sure they had family off the ark, you know? But you don't hear anything about how they got on the ark. Sure, Ham, Shem, and Japheth had wives, and I'm sure they had families. Were they on that ark? Nope. So be thinking all the way around in terms of, now they may have been Nephilim hybrids, who knows? But when you get down to brass tacks, the bottom line I'm trying to say is it's hard to stay alert and stay alive when you're putting all this effort into things that require too much effort. So be very, very conscious about that, y'all. So hopefully this was a blessing to you. Until next time, y'all stay alert.
Stay alive. Like a cell, they want to spin up, but the center of the next is me.